Good morning and a very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. We're into the second hour of this Thursday show. I hope you're all very well indeed out there, wherever you are listening to us. Right, let's get to some of your comments and other matters before we take the obituary notices. Of course, this is jackpot day, so I know some of you very anxious to get those numbers. Johnny, who was on to us, he was speaking to us. He's a caretaker in a school. He was on a bus heading to Dublin. Johnny's much more than a caretaker. He's an absolute gentleman and so, so good to all the children. Hopefully they all get what they deserve. 100% behind you all. And what they want is the same as what other people are getting. Doing the exact same job, just employed directly by the Department of Education rather than by the board of the school, with money from the Department of Education. Hi, I'm sending this email about the public toilets. It's awful how people treat public toilets. People have no respect or manners. I've been helping out cleaning Portaloos this last couple of weeks, and what I've seen has left me speechless. The way people use Portaloos is on another level. For what people do in the toilet is beyond me. Food and drink left in them. The number of clothing items that I've found. Boxers, pants, T-shirts, socks, trousers. I could wash them and open a shop. And for the toilet roll, what is the thing with toilet roll? Putting full rolls down the toilets, peeing on full rolls, throwing it on the ground. If that's what people treat toilets like, what must their house be like? This is interesting because these are public toilets that are in a wild state. And does something happen to certain people when they go into toilets where they throw full toilet rolls down the toilet and piddle on them? Or they just tear tons of toilet paper and just leave it there and piddle on it or what have you. It has to be mostly fellas. Beer cans, plastic cups, food packaging. Who is bringing food or drink for that matter into a public toilet? It is absolutely disgraceful. And something seems to twig in people's minds, some people's minds, when they go into these toilets. You couldn't treat a toilet in a house like it because it would be unusable after about a couple of hours. I don't know what's the story or what's going on there. Rightio, let's talk about fishing, because yesterday we were talking about the dumping of non-native oysters on the banks of Loch Foyle. It's a horrible thing that's going on because it's rotten flesh as well. These aren't just discarded shells. That would be bad enough in and of itself. Where is the article on the dumped oysters published? Pacific oysters should not be in Atlantic waters. They compete with the native oysters. It's ecocide. Well, this is an unregulated area and is common in the Foyle. Liam O'Brien says that the Foyle has been abused. It's going to be a crisis, and the oyster industry is already in crisis. They grow to a certain size and then they're discarded. Then they're left to accumulate. They are not meeting the standards. There were also jet skis doing 60 miles per hour. There's no regulation at all. It's out of control. Another, it's Inland Fisheries that's responsible for our lochs and the lochs agency. So that's one person's point of view. Another, North Inishowen is the same. There must be millions of rubber bands there discarded because oyster fishermen are leaving them there. Because it's unregulated, when the market finishes, which is close to now, all the equipment will be abandoned there. I was flabbergasted by the scale of the amount of trestles, effectively. Hundreds of thousands of them. I mean, that's farming on a big scale. Lots of you messaged into about the cost of living. A caller says we're paying extra for alcohol because of Charlie McCreevy. It was a similar situation to the petrol costs. It was falling apart because everyone was going north to buy it. So they put a levy on to help build the government finances, and they've just added to it every year. Me and my family had breakfast recently in the Mountaintop Diner. It was great food and great service and very reasonably priced, Jerry believes. As once worked within the family butcher's business, you wouldn't mix different meats together to sell as another product to make more money. You give the customer what they're looking for, nothing less. We were told not to use plastics to package meat, and then told it was okay to use. Cost of living would have to be cut to make everything affordable. Stop the middlemen fleecing customers. That's off the back of a story we carried whereby, and it's not being done under the table, and it's not something you would see commonly in your local family butchers, but certain shops now are mixing pork mince in with mince meat, you know, beef effectively. It is labelled, but people are getting an inferior product, and some reports that the cost is still as high, even though the cost to put it out onto the counter is less. Hi, Greg. My friend was in Dublin 2 weeks ago in a hotel. €75 for a fillet steak was on the menu. Now, I would need, and I'm sorry to bring it down to this, I'd need the entire cow to come in for €75 for a fillet steak. What annoys me now is you go to a restaurant and a nice dessert like apple pie and cream, the fake cream is out of a can. The dairy farmer should be up in arms about this, and the customer is paying a higher price than ever for a basic apple pie and cream. Interesting. I haven't come across that myself, but I wouldn't be a massive dessert eater. It just depends what's on the menu. A caller believes it's going to be a tough winter with the cost of living. I blame the government. Another, it's no wonder people have no money for basics like a decent lunch if they have to pay about €1,800 a month in rent. The woes of this country have a lot to do with landlords, which is fueled by a lack of housing, which is a result of government not building houses. Many politicians are landlords. Maybe it suits them that there's a housing crisis. £16.50 for soup and sandwich. Gosh, I'd make dinner for five people at home as many times I did. No wonder people aren't eating out. But yeah, that's the cost, you know, and it depends on what your income is. Because by the time a business person makes that soup from scratch, makes the sandwich from scratch and all the materials, pays someone to serve the table, pays the water rates, pays the electricity, they are saying there's not a great deal of money in that soup and sandwich for £16.50. So they can't open a restaurant or a cafe and not make money. You have to make money, right? So you have to charge what some people will pay. But that does mean people like you will stay at home and make dinner for five people many times over for the same amount. And that's the problem with the industry, isn't it? They would far prefer if the raw materials and electricity and water was cheaper, because they could provide a cheaper product cost-wise and have the restaurant full. I don't think anyone wants a half-full restaurant. Shame on a text you had earlier on blaming refugee. Well, I don't know what that's in relation to. The price of tea in some restaurants is terrible. £10.50 for a pot of tea. Now, that can't be right. €10.50 for a pot of tea? Seriously? My word. A tea bag and a bit of water? Surely not. £10.50 for a pot of tea. Wow. Okay, that's a shocker. I'm not going to lie to you. Again, tea's not something I'd buy an awful lot. I'd have a glass of mineral or a beer, depending on the time of day or where we're at or driving or whatever the story is. But tea, £10.50, because I find myself, if there's an all-day breakfast, going for that, and generally it comes with tea. Anyway, okay, just to remind you, coming up after 11, Paul McLaughlin of Ballacdur Garden Centre is in studio. He's answering any questions you might have about your garden, your lawn, plants you have in your balcony. Maybe you're not lucky enough to have some outdoor space and you're using a window, your mantelpiece. Well, hardly your mantelpiece. Who's a window for the mantelpiece? Windowsill. You know where I'm coming from. Okay, that's one expert coming up after 11 o'clock. I've got an expert in studio with me right now. It's Karen Harkin, owner of Karen Harkin Professional, based out of Lifford. Good morning to you. Thanks so much for calling up.
Thank you, Greg.
Over, down, I haven't a clue. Doesn't matter.
Over.
You go over to Letterkenny, do you?
Yeah, okay. Do so.
What about Buncrana?
Not much, no.
But would you go up to it or down to it?
Down.
What about Dublin?
Down.
Belfast?
Up.
Okay. Right, that's the settling in period over.
Yes, okay.
Quick fire questions. Now,
okay.
Yesterday we were reading from a survey, Karen, which was conducted online amongst 1,149 women aged between 18 and 65. 35% of women have issues with thinning hair. Breakage and thinning are the top two hair concerns with women. 76% of women have noticed hair loss during periods of stress. Right, Karen. I think it's great that this starts a conversation, because people can be very conscious about their hair.
Yeah.
And it's not just how it might be styled, yeah, or it's how it makes them feel.
Not just women, Greg. It is males and children as well.
Mm.
If that study was done throughout the whole genders, it would be a lot bigger, I would say. So okay, that's a lot bigger problem than it actually...
So what do you find you're hearing from your clients? I mean, does one in four sort of align with what you feel is happening out there?
Yeah, and the women, definitely. So after we come back from the COVID lockdown, it was really severe. Like, so I kind of really focused on that area then and kind of educated myself on why it's happening. So COVID did play a big factor as well and caused a lot of after effects of illness. Again, you've got your cancer, so it's such a big player.
And just in relation to, and we'll go through some of those, but just in relation to the coming out of COVID, there were some reports that having COVID was leading to hair loss or thinning hair. And then I did interviews with some hairdressers, stroke stylists afterwards, and there was a sense that it did grow back, if that was the cause of it.
Yeah, it did definitely grow back, but it played havoc in the bodies and the systems. There was such a lot of hair loss from after that. But again, a lot of other issues after COVID that, I don't know, maybe there's underlying health issues from it.
Yeah. So you mentioned alopecia there, and I think often because of people that speak out and advocates of alopecia, often we would consider that to be complete baldness. But often you get women and men with alopecia where they'll get a significant patch of hair loss. Now, they can cover it, but they're conscious of it and is there. That is also alopecia, effectively, isn't it?
There is. There's so many different sorts of alopecia. There's alopecia areata, male pattern baldness, female pattern baldness, frontal fibrosis alopecia, and again, spotting alopecia. I've seen that a lot in children.
Why children, do you think? Is it the pressures?
Pressures. There's, again, it attacks the nervous system, so trauma. There's loads of issues that cause it. Alopecia areata is an autoimmune disease that attacks the hair follicle. So again, it's something, a lack of something or trauma that's caused in somebody's life.
Yeah, exactly. Because even though we have a name for alopecia, we don't really, the professionals haven't necessarily figured out precisely what's happening.
Is
it going to come back? Is it not going to come back? And so on and so forth. Right. So in terms of your digging into this a little bit more post-COVID, like, what did you discover? What surprised you? And then we'll talk a little bit how you're helping your clients in this area.
What surprised me was the volume of hair loss. As again, so I just dug into educating myself on why it's happening and finding solutions for helping people with it and trying to get their hair back to what it was before they lost it.
And hair loss can be thinning too, can't it? Like, it just doesn't have as much volume as it used to have.
A lot of women have that, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Menopause causes that, again, hormonal imbalance.
Yeah, because some of it can be age-related, can't it?
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean you can't help yourself with it, but some of it can be age-related and what have you. We're talking about an age category from 18 to 65 in this study. Yes. So, you know, hormone issues or menopause or what have you are not always going to be a factor.
No, they're not. Weight loss, illness, again, vitamin deficiency. There is a lot of underlying health issues that causes the hair loss.
Right, so before we talk about how you help your clients, talk to me a little bit about the impact it has on them.
Oh, I've seen so many clients that's come to me from all over Ireland now. You know, I've treated ladies in Cork, Belfast. It's just life-changing. Mm. You know, their whole confidence is taken. And a lady said to me, she just hates looking in the mirror.
Really, yeah.
So it's just, it just
dreads
changes.
A wedding invitation,
doesn't go out,
or
doesn't go out. Like.
Really. And, you know, I suppose too, it's maybe difficult to talk about, and the salon or your clinic becomes a safe place too to just vent it and say,
absolutely,
this is how this has been impacting me.
I have a clinic based in Lifford there, private consultation rooms. It's all catered for. Yeah. I can cater for everybody as much as I can.
Talk to me then about how you're helping people. And obviously your reputation has gone beyond Lifford if you're talking about people from Cork and down the country calling up. So if someone comes in to you with hair loss, what's the process?
So first of all, I do a consultation and assess the hair loss, what it is. I give them 4 or 5 solutions. It's again based on lifestyle, the amount of hair loss, what's the best system for you to use. We then go through different options of hair replacements, and both of us make the decision together. It's not just me. Again, the client has to be happy with what they're getting. So,
but when you sort of say to someone that, you know, lifestyle or stress or diet might, do people take that on board, or they kind of, do you get a pushback on that?
No, they take it on board.
They're happy enough.
Again, I'm here to advise clients. I'm not here to push anything on them.
Yeah, of course.
It's just to, you know, give you options and loads of solutions of what is available.
And much of it, other than obviously when we start talking about, and we can talk about sort of hair pieces or you know, it doesn't have to be a full head of hair, I presume. Yeah. A lot of this is long term, so they have to buy into what you're saying, don't they? You know, when am I going to see results? We're sort of conditioned now to want something straight away, aren't we? But there has to be a commitment from them, I presume.
Yeah, so the body has to be treated from the inside. I'm not a trichologist as of yet. I'm hoping to be in the future. Okay. But I treat the outside. Mm. So as a hairstylist, trying to give them back the hair that they lost and replicating it. So I ask them to bring me in a picture of what their hair once was, and then I choose the best system and colour it and cut it to what they used to be before they lost it.
Mm, okay. And that makes them walk out the door feeling less conscious about it.
The feedback I've been getting is just, you know, so fulfilling for me as a person and doing what I'm doing. To be able to help so many women, again, children as well, and I've treated males.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, for sure. So, obviously, outside of the styling and what have you, what other advice are you giving to clients, dependent on a case-by-case basis? So, say someone, you know, 30, their hair is thinning, or they have a patch of alopecia or what have you. And I think, too, if you're stressed about something like that there, you actually get extra stressed.
Yes,
so, rather than finding a way to fix it, you're getting more stressed and it's there longer or spread. So with you working on the outside, what can you do for people?
Again, it's giving them back the hair that they lost, giving them back their confidence. I've had people saying I've changed their lives. And again, so fulfilling for me and so rewarding. So I've put in so much into my education, trying to figure out best solutions for ladies. Being happy to endorse my qualifications with a fantastic lady in Kildare trained me. And just finding solutions and trying getting funding. So there is funding as well.
Talk to me a bit more about that.
The funding. So again, there's a HSE funding and there's the PRSA grant. Again, you can get it from your private health insurance as well. So your HSE goes up to 770.
And so what's that covering?
So that's for ladies with going through chemotherapy, cancer. Mm. So you have to have a medical card and a letter signed from the doctor stating what medical condition of hair loss you have. You bring that to me with your medical card and I put it in through my system, through the vendorship with the HSE, and I'm able to get that funding for you. So it's a huge, huge help. Mm. So for somebody that's not working, Greg, or you know, that is really ill, that don't have to travel to Dublin, that I'm here on the doorstep for ladies in Donegal. Not only Donegal, again, I have worked with ladies all around Ireland and I can get the funding everywhere there as well.
There's been huge advances too in, hair pieces, wigs, etc., hasn't there?
Because,
I think people listening who maybe tried this in the 70s or 80s, sweating, itching, it not looking natural. I mean, you style it as well. The hair is, you style the hair as if it were a head of hair.
Right. So going back to what you said there, the wigs that were previously given to women, what they've said to me is just so hot, so unnatural looking, so big, just didn't mimic their own hair. Whereas I come into play and I just can do it with 100% human hair and just give them back the hair they lost.
Yeah, for sure, because if you're incredibly conscious about it, you the finished product as you go through your treatment, if that's what's triggered the hair loss, it has to look as good as your hair did previously, or else you're still going to feel the same, aren't you?
And it's making women just giving them back their confidence, be able to go out the door again and make them feel like themselves.
In terms of products that can be applied, have you come across any that are particularly successful?
Not yet. Again, Regain is quite good. It is quite good. It's been there a long time, but it does work. There's so many processes of the hair fall. And again, a trichologist would be the best to give advice on that. Rosemary oil is a great natural remedy. Massaging that in every night can bring back hair follicles and that blood supply.
I could bring back hair follicles, or is it too late?
I think it's a wee bit too late for you, Greg. Sorry.
So I just have this 6 head forever and it's not even a 4 head anymore.
You could give it a go. Everything's worth a shot. Why not?
Part of me actually would... I'm... I'm lucky, and that's why I sort of went straight to women. I'm lucky that in my early 20s, and my four-year-old's got the same hair as yes. I had, right? He's got widow peaks, he's four. But his mum's a hairdresser, so that's all right. We'll get that sorted. But I never really, my hair grew in different directions. I never liked it, you know, and I consciously shaved mine off.
Yeah.
So, and it gave me confidence. Isn't that strange? So I can very much understand and relate to the stresses it puts on fellas losing yes. the hair, but it's not something I ever personally experienced, and I don't think I could do hair now, no, if you know what I mean. Yeah. But as you quite rightly pointed out at the start, hair loss can have a huge impact on children. Especially in school, oh, it's yes. tough, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, again, a few children with spotting, and I've made moulds for this couple of kids. Because it's completely bald, it doesn't come off, so it's a semi-permanent solution.
Okay, so it's almost like a patch you
it's put
it's
a in? Hair patch, yeah, mm. and it can be used at the front hairline, it can be used on the back, any sort of hair loss or any volume. So what I do is make a mould off that area, I then cut out human hair piece, and it's glued on with a medical adhesive.
And then cut in.
And then it's cut in, yeah. coloured, totally undetectable.
Do women go for that a bit?
They do, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but you know, if you use extensions, there can be a bit of weight to that. Yeah, and if yeah. you have an area of hair whereby it's thinning, the
and you're
less
pulling again, yeah.
pull you're putting on that, yeah. really, the better. So that's proven to be a solution for...
Absolutely. And go back to the frontal fibrosis alopecia for the
Talk
women.
Talk to me about, what is that?
Sorry?
What is that?
Frontal fibrosis. Yeah. Again, an autoimmune disease.
Mm.
So it attacks the hair follicle.
So where would the hair loss be present on a woman in that situation?
Oh, I've seen ladies come back and their hair is completely gone to the back of the crown nearly.
Oh,
you
right,
know?
Okay.
And it is so...
And does it white? Is it like the parting widening?
The whole lot gone. Okay, the whole lot gone. Yeah. So that new U system's fantastic for that.
Mm.
Again, I have a lady that I do this on. And she gets 9 weeks out of it before she's come back to me to get it taken off and the scalp nourished and cleansed and then re-put back on. But it's fantastic. That lady just smiles every time I put it back on her head again. Mm.
Can she wash and dry hair
yeah,
as normal?
Absolutely, so
the glue, I'm not sure it's more complex than a glue. But yeah, I am an elderly woman and I used to have lots of hair. And recently, around 8 weeks ago, lost a lot of hair. And I'm now on antibiotics. And it's right, too, that person's getting medical treatment because... The sudden loss of hair, obviously, there's something
underlying, yeah absolutely.
B12 injections help with hair loss in menopause, do they?
They absolutely do, yeah. Iron, folic acid is another fantastic supplement.
As a hairdresser, you will know, you can tell an awful lot about a person from their hair.
Yeah.
You know, about whether they're run down, not run down, stressed or not stressed. Yeah. Over the years, I'm sure you've picked that up. Really, the where I'm getting to is that we really need to be conscious that, you know, our hair tells a lot about us. And if we're not well, if we're stressed or what have you, or going through treatment, that's where it's going to manifest for many people.
Big time. Illness, underlying issues. The weight loss is another big issue.
Talk to me a little bit about that, because obviously, you know, we've seen a massive explosion in the popularity of weight loss drugs, for an example.
Yes, the Pajero.
Pajero, exactly, yeah. And so on and so forth. How does weight loss, do we know how weight loss affects hair?
Because of the lack of nutrition that's going into the body. So when you're on Pajero, you really need to supplement your system. May it be juicing or supplementing with your vitamins.
Mm.
Iron, folic acid and B12 are the three main major supplements you would need. And again, juicing, where you're not putting on a big calorie intake, but your body is getting nutrients.
Yeah, that also, because we did a feature on this a couple of weeks ago too, gyms are seeing a lot of muscle mass being lost as well. It's indiscriminate. And if you're not training or if you're not focusing on that, you know, you could find yourself skinny, in inverted commas, but with, you know, damaged hair, or, you know, you might not then be happy with your physical shape.
It's suppressing your appetite. So, of course, you're not eating, so you're not getting anything that the body needs. Yeah. So be mindful of that when you are going on Pajero or any of the weight loss drugs, that you do take extra care to supplement your body for your whole system and immunity.
Do you, if someone comes in and you broach that with them, do they be surprised that weight loss could
Women don't like to talk about it now, Greg. Yeah. They don't like to tell their secrets that they're on the... But I would kind of know anyway, just being on the salon.
Of course, it's experience.
It's experience, yeah, absolutely. Exactly.
Anything else important to mention, Karen?
They've covered the PSA grants. We'd have seen let me see. No, I think that's everything. Yeah. Again, a lot of ladies use these hair pieces just for the blow dry in the box. You know, corporate busy women just want that
what
instant.
You just said, stop saying things. Blow dry in a box.
Blow dry in a box.
What's that?
That's what I use it for, Greg.
What is it?
It's your instant hairstyle.
Oh, right.
You don't have to go to the salon anymore. You just get your hair blow dried.
It's a blow dry in the box.
And you pop it on in the morning, you're good to go. Away you go to your work.
Hi, Greg. I missed. What oils did Karen recommend you massage into your hair that would promote, I suppose, healthy hair, but perhaps hair growth? Rosemary
oil. Yeah. So again, massaging that on every night, again, brings good blood supply back to the follicle. Mm. So what you want to do is stimulate your hair growth.
Yeah, yeah.
And your rosemary oil works outside.
I suddenly got two patches of bald on the side of my head. I'm 68 and past menopause. Any suggestions? I'm not getting any worse, but can I do anything to help regrow? You can. There's stuff you can get.
There is stuff you can get, but age plays a lot of factor when you're degenerating. You know, everything slows down.
Yeah.
So it's not...
I think too worth going into your chemist and having a chat with your chemist there, because there are products there that might stimulate it. And I think too, sometimes, dependent on the cause of it, and you're the expert and you're quite right. So, but by the when you start treating something, you maybe it takes your mind off the what's causing you maybe anxiety or stress as well.
Absolutely.
So it might have an effect in that regard as well. We just simply don't know, because we're very complex things, Karen. We're very complex people. Right, Karen Harkin, owner of Karen Harkin Professional Lifford. I presume just search Karen Harkin Professional and people will get you.
And Karen Harkin Hair Enhancers on Instagram.
Okay, very good indeed.
Thank you, Greg.
All right, thanks so much for calling over. So, further sightings of the Asian hornet have been confirmed in Ireland. The National Parks and Wildlife Service has said it follows the sighting and capture of an Asian hornet in Cork. That sighting and capture was the second confirmed identification of an Asian hornet in Ireland and triggered the establishment of the Asian Hornet Management Group, chaired by the NPWS. Extensive monitoring was then carried out to determine if a larger population existed, and the survey team intensified efforts after the additional sightings. The location of these sightings and monitoring activities, for some reason, are not being disclosed for operational purposes, which is normally what you hear from Angada Síochána as they try and track a gang and they don't want to let the cat out of the bag. I never thought I would hear that from the National Parks and Wildlife Service about the Asian hornet, but we are where we are. And we are with Angus Kennedy, nature guide with Nature Northwest. Angus, now don't go too far here for operational purposes, all right? How are you keeping? No, you're muted, Angus. Sorry, you're going to have to unmute for me so I can hear your dulcet tones.
Sorry about that. Yeah, we'll give away nothing, Greg. We'll give away no secrets.
Right, so...
All well, thank you.
Yeah, great stuff. The Asian hornet, before we talk about its threat to maybe the local bee population, where is it from and does it get carried here in winds, or is someone irresponsibly, you know, hiving them or whatever? I don't know. What's your theory?
It's Chinese based, so there's a couple of different types of hornets in China, and that's where they've been, and they've been part of the ecosystem there for a very, very long time, and that's all been okay until they were imported accidentally into France. Was the first place that they showed up, and I think it was 2004 that they first appeared in France. Down the southwest of France, there was a hive of them found, and they can reproduce pretty quickly, and they can spread over an area pretty quickly. So that's back in 2004, so 21 years ago, and now there's quite a few thousand nests in France, and they spread across Europe. But they would have been brought in with maybe pottery or maybe some plants or something like that.
So, you know, sometimes on one of those channels high up, you'll see Australian Border Force, and you know, they're being very fussy about certain plants coming in because it may contain eggs or something. This is the type of stuff, presumably, they don't want outside insects or plants coming into their island effectively. So that's what we're talking about. That's interesting. So why are these such a threat to the native bee population? And let's face it, that's a population already facing its challenges.
Yeah, it is. It's because we've nothing quite like it here. And that's the thing, when you bring in something from somewhere else and it doesn't have any kind of biological controls or doesn't have any way of keeping it in nature, doesn't have a way of keeping it in check in an area, it can tend to do awful damage. So we've 101 species of bee, and one of them makes honey, and all the rest are either the bumblebees or the solitary bees, as they're called. But they're all crucial for our food production, and they're crucial for our wildflowers and for just keeping our whole system going, our natural system going. But there's nothing necessarily that hunts the bees, or very few things. Some birds do, but very few things. They don't make much of an impact. So when this character comes in, the Asian hornets, they specialise in bees. Not just bees, they'll hunt all sorts of different flying creatures, but they'll hover right outside the bee's nest once they've located it and just pick them off one by one and seem to be able to kill them very easily.
How easy is it, from what we've learned from France, to control them?
With great difficulties, yeah. hence the slight bit of secrecy and mystery around it, but also hence the big effort and the group that's been put in place straight away. There was, as you rightly said, there was one spotted there about 4 years ago in Dublin. It must have just kind of blown over. It wasn't no hive, because we'd know about it if the hives had been produced. And then the one that was spotted in Cork just a few weeks ago, I think it's actually very impressive what they've done, because if you see a bee flying past in your garden or a wasp flying past in your garden, they've similar kind of habits. To try and find that wasp nest will be a difficult thing to do. And that they've managed to do, and the hornets have a greater range of flight, so the nest could be over a huge area, really. And they've managed, between various different sightings that they've had, different people going out monitoring specifically for this, to be able to track it down through triangulation, by looking at where it is and then looking where the other ones are, and then just good old-fashioned geography that we learn in school, figuring out the distances on the map, and then honing down, and now they'll destroy that nest, and hopefully it's just the one.
We haven't seen them here in the northwest. Is that just by good luck at this point, or is there any climate factors there?
So far, it seems to be more luck than anything else, really. The climate, one would think, wouldn't help them, because it would be too cold here, particularly for the queens, because the queens hibernate, so they will go a little bit like the wasps or the bees. They'll go under little log piles and whatnot, but they wouldn't be used to the colds that we have, certainly up here in the northwest. However, as we've seen from this summer, as we've seen from recent patterns, as Met Aaron can tell us, our climate is warming and warming. And people might have noticed, I've had a few people in touch recently about a beautiful bird, the little egret. It's like a heron, and big, tall, as white can be heron. And that's something that just arrived into the country 25, 30 years ago. And now they're breeding and spreading. So the climate is, with it changing ever so slightly, it's suiting these kind of characters. But we're lucky it hasn't made it here yet.
Yeah, and when you talk about that, you could be talking about 0.5 a degree, all of these things. The ecosystem is balanced as such that they can make a difference. You talked of, like, I was a bit facetious because of the wording, right? And it's familiar with what I get from Garda press releases. Why might, though, in all seriousness from me, they withhold locations because for operational purposes? Why do you think that might be?
Well, I suppose they want to be able to study it in peaks is one of the first things. Yeah. So to be able to see, has it spread further? What kind of population are in the nest and the rest of it? And then also when they're destroying the nest and when they're destroying the individual little hornets, if any of them spread or get out of the place, they can sting. They'll sting just like a wasp or just like a bee. It's not a terrible sting. It's sore. Most of us have been stung by wasps or bees at this stage and we know about it, but they'll just be trying to keep people away from that. And it'll be as simple as that. It'll be nothing more mysterious than that as such, you know.
And but in case so I haven't been...
handle on sorry. How many of them are. And are they spreading?
Yeah, and for it to be abundantly clear, our conversations about the Asian hornet's threat to bees, not people. They don't present any greater threat than a wasp or a bee or anything like that.
Yeah, they don't. The threat to us is an existential threat in a way, in that they would eventually threaten some of our pollinator species, our really important pollinator species. But if one stung you, you'd certainly be annoyed, but that's all it's going to do.
So,
in very, very rare cases, just like wasps and bees, some people can have some strong reactions, but that's very unusual.
Of course, yeah. No, the greatest threat, if I'm in the proximity of a wasp or a bee, is to myself, slapping myself around the face and such, or running and tripping over a chair, although I've grown up a little bit since. One bee creates honey. Is it one bee creates honey in a way that we can harvest it, or one bee creates honey at all?
Yeah, that's it. So out of the 101 species of bee that we have in Ireland, only one of those species is a honeybee. And it's an amazing tactic, because, of course, bees rely on flowers. The adults rely on the nectar, which is that sweet, sweet juice at the very bottom of the flower. And the flower relies on the bee because it needs the bee to move the pollen from one flower to another. And that's how the thing is fertilized and on goes the system. So some bees feed the pollen to their babies, but they all rely on the nectar. And of course, in the wintertime, there's no flowers. So most bees will die off. Some of them lay their eggs for the following year. Others will produce new queens, which will hibernate, and the rest of the colony dies off. But the honeybee is a little bit different.
It's the only one that gathers and stores honey.
Yeah, and it has the ability to build these little wax chambers and then to be able to process the nectar into honey, into something that's going to last, and then pop them into these chambers, seal them up. It's incredible, really, when you think about what such a tiny little creature is doing.
And there is a social structure in that hive as well. That's what's quite remarkable, in that everyone has their role, and some roles are more important than others. All are equally important because the hive survives on that, but some are discardable, some aren't. You know, it's really quite remarkable how it runs.
Absolutely. So wasps are similar in that kind of way. They have the various different roles, and the numbers of bees or wasps can reach into their thousands. So how they're able to stay organized and stay all effectively loyal to the one queen is quite incredible. And once that queen then later on in the summer stops producing eggs, some of those eggs that she's produced will turn into the new queens, and ferocious battles begin then, because then a battle for dominance of those queens. So it's like a Game of Thrones episode or something like that, but it's happening under the ground or in the little hives or deep inside a big old tree, and we don't see it at all. But eventually one of those queens will emerge as victorious. It will mate. The male's role is purely just to mate, and that's it. They don't do anything else. They don't do any of the heavy lifting. And then the worker bees, their role will be redundant later on in the year as the queen goes off to hibernate.
Yeah, it's astonishing stuff. And honey, you know, if unspoiled, in other words, without any sort of external influence, it will never go out of date.
It lasts for a phenomenal amount of time. Yeah. Phenomenal amount of time.
They've discovered, maybe I've misread this, but they've discovered from sort of Egyptian times honey that was edible because it had been kept in such a way that it wasn't... I can't think of the word, but it hadn't been in any way influenced by... Contaminated is the word.
If they're stored or sealed in the correct way, they'll last a phenomenal amount of time. And of course, honey is very good for you. It's a natural product. It's often used for storing other things. Then foods will be stored in the honey. And then, of course, depending on the type of flowers that the honey has been going for, some people will argue of different properties that it'll have depending on the pollen that's come from the different flowers.
Yeah, fern or this or that or the other.
Yeah, that's only the honeybee. And the important thing, I think, when we're talking bees is to remember the other species are equally important in a different way. Because if we didn't have honey, we'd possibly be able to survive. But if we didn't have bees in general, we wouldn't. Because a third of the food that each and every one of us has eaten up till now, a third of the food is only there because of bees. And you think of strawberries, the strawberries in the markets now, lovely Irish strawberries. Each strawberry flower needs to be visited at least four times by a bee or some kind of pollinating insect before it's able to turn into a strawberry. And we can't do that. We don't have the machines to do that, the manpower to do it. It's not possible for us to do it without the bees.
Talking about bees, I was trimming the grass last week up the top of the garden and I uncovered a bee's nest in the ground. I left it alone after that, but can I do anything to help them out, or just do I leave it be, pun intended?
leave it be, let them to buzz about. If you've exposed the nest and you're able to see inside it, cover it up with some sticks, cover it up with some vegetation. And then a lovely thing that you can do is buy yourself, say, a pot of lavender, or go into any of our super garden centres around the county and ask them for some pollinator friendly plants at the moment. And in fact, that's one of the best things that any of us can do for bees, and not just for bees, for insects in general, because our insects, including the bees, are in trouble. They're slipping away. And if we can just provide more food, a lot of it is starvation, because a lot of us are tidying up our gardens, tidying up our area. So if you can provide some, be it potted plants or some other plants in your garden, to be able to give them cover as much of the year as possible, that
brilliant,
would be the best.
Fascinating stuff. We'll watch on with interest. Do you believe that we will find ourselves having to come to terms with a with an Asian hornet population in this country, really, if the truth be told. We don't, I mean, they could be well embedded in parts for all we know at this point.
Yeah, it really is 50-50, I got to say, and I just don't know. The fact that we're an island off an island is really helpful. The fact that our climate is that little bit cooler is really helpful. And also, hugely, the fact that awareness is now up. I think years ago, there wouldn't have been as much of a fuss about it, and certainly people wouldn't have been looking out for these things, and people wouldn't have been aware of the role of wasps and bees and the rest of it. So we just got to keep monitoring. And if you do see it, if you do come across something that you think might be it, Don't go near them, don't go whacking them, because there's a lot of other characters that look like them but do an important job. But go on to the website biodiversityireland.ie and they'll be able to help you out.
Thanks, Angus. Great to chat to you again. Take care. Angus Kennedy, Nature Guide with Nature Northwest. Right, we're going to buzz off for an ad break. Don't tell me your phone's not listening to you, because during the ad break there, as I was seeing if there was any messages or what have you, scrolling through Facebook, every fourth ad for delicious Irish strawberries. Now, I've not searched strawberries. I've not seen that ad before because I would know if it was there or not. Angus Kennedy mentioned delicious Irish strawberries that are there now, and all of a sudden, I'm starting to see Facebook ads about strawberries. That's not random. Is it? That can't be random. And they do insist that your phone isn't listening to you. I hope I don't sound like a you-know-what. But anyway, that's just what happened. He mentioned strawberries. Now I'm getting Facebook ads about strawberries. Okay, so the weather. Longer spells of rain, heavy at times for today, with moving in behind the rain that was there already this morning, this into early afternoon. There's a potential for spot flooding, isolated thunderstorms possible. We haven't had rain in a while, so the roads might be a little bit slippier. And also, too, you know, the drains might not be cleared, so you could have little gatherings of water on the roads, you know, when they catch the wheel and they pull you in, and just be conscious of that if you're out in the roads, as I will be. Temperatures today, 15 or 17 degrees, winds moderate to fresh. News at 11 coming up.